Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
So, I was talking to my first cousin-in-law the other day.
Wait, I don't think that's a thing. Who's this person?
Oh, whoops. This isn't going to work. Oh, just say your aunt's brother. Oh, no. I've got to answer that if that's going to work. So, I'll say...
Fail.
Yeah, I'll say my aunt's brother. And then
come in.
Yeah, you'll come in. So you had it right. Oh, that's your third uncle. No, it'll work.
Okay, we'll figure it out.
Yeah,
all right, let me start over again. Okay. Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
So I was talking to my first cousin-in-law the other day.
Wait, I don't think that's a thing. Who was this person?
My aunt's brother.
Oh, that's your third uncle.
No, I think it's the second uncle twice removed.
Maybe it's no relation at all?
It could be a double uncle.
No, I think it's a cousin.
I think it might be the same thing as my wife's brother's aunt.
Jesus. All right.
All right, it's Tuesday.
It is Tuesday. How did it go down here, Brad, last night? Everything all right?
It was good.
It was very good.
Yeah. Thank you.
That pool table is so comfortable.
It's really comfortable. Wow.
Yeah. I didn't mean to like rattle the pool balls in the middle of the night when I was under the table. Sorry.
That was calming.
Okay.
Good. It worked. It worked. Because that's, you know, the way I fall asleep usually.
Yeah.
We've talked to you before, Patrick, about playing with your...
Thank you.
Okay, so it's Tuesday. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Bradford Mailer.
Bradford is here.
Bradford. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We only go by proper next week. Don't do that at all.
I normally just go by Brad, but if you're going to call me something other than Brad,
go for Bradford.
You can go for Bradford. You can go for Braddy.
Braddy.
But it's never Bradley.
No, never Bradley. Because that's not your name, right?
Right.
But Mr. Braddy, sometimes.
But people probably...
Mac Braddy.
Mac Braddy.
Okay.
It goes on.
It does.
Okay, so what are we talking about today?
This today, right, Brad, we're going to really get into the meat of the kind of the concept here, theory.
Yeah.
Right? And you have a really fascinating kind of a... I don't even know if you call it a backstory or a theory.
Yeah, it's just
or
a it's, weird theory.
It's really interesting.
Conspiracy theory. I don't know what. But yeah, it's a weird story. Again, so I came to this theory sort of out of the blue while. So, you know, I'm listening to Hop Along a lot, right?
Yeah.
So I'm enjoying that and also basically trying to get into. Like, I'm recalling listening to you guys, your old podcast.
Mm-hmm. When we did an interview with Hop Along.
Uh-huh. Right, because in fact, I didn't know you did an interview.
Oh, them, okay.
Right, so, but I do recall MJ was on, and MJ played a Hop Along song.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, that's an awesome song, and
I
made note of it. So, basically, I was on a trip. I was on a trip up to... Philadelphia, in fact, just north of Philadelphia to visit my aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was listening to that podcast and, you know, I re-ran that podcast. And then I also went back and listened to I think it's your second show where I was, you know, same deal where Waxahachie and Swearin' were played. And I was like, man, I love these two. But, you know, I just never acted on it.
Yeah,
so
you made note that they were cool songs, right?
Exactly. So, anyhow, that's sort of what I'm doing on this trip up to visit my aunt, and you know, spending some time. And then I realized, oh, there's an interview with these guys that I should listen to. So I listened to that, which was an awesome interview, like where they talked about their, you know, their influences and whatnot, and they all seemed. Mostly to be Francis's picks, except for that one. I think that the one that I probably wouldn't include is the Nirvana.
Yeah, the drummer picked the Nirvana song, as
right.
I recall.
Right, Mark. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, like the rest of those picks were really awesome. And So one of the picks was Ballad of a Thin Man off Highway 61.
Mm-hmm.
And you jumped right in with, man, oh, man, I was worried about that. That's, you know, that's about rock and roll journalists. And
that's,
you know,
what I always heard was the story, that Jan Wenner was, you know, kind of was supposed to be about him. This is what I always heard.
Right. And for whatever reason, I was like, I don't know about that. I don't. Yeah. I really don't. I don't know about that at all. So
I think Patty's wrong.
But no, I mean, and for whatever reason, I'm going to visit my aunt, right?
Yep.
And this theory immediately jumped into my head. So I'll ask you, Jim, in family ties or genealogy, what would my aunt's brother be to me?
First of all, I was told there would be no math. So, wait, start over.
So my mom has a brother who was married to a woman who was my aunt.
Mm-hmm. We got that.
Your aunt.
And then
where does it go from there?
Right. So my aunt has a brother.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Is he?
Is he just my cousin?
But so it's an aunt by marriage.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then that brother. I think he's my cousin. I don't know about that. I don't know that that's anything. Is it a thing?
I don't know.
I think it is. I think these people are cousins.
First cousin, maybe.
I may be wrong about
no.
that.
Yeah.
But anyhow, I feel like these people are related.
Okay.
Right? So anyhow, again, thinking Patty's theory is wrong, I immediately...
See, I thought that's what you were going to ask me about, whether or not his theory was wrong.
I think Brad's pretty sure it's wrong.
Okay. I think it's wrong.
I have to question the timeline if it's Jan Wenner.
Exactly. This is the thing Brad pointed out. Right. I was like, Jan Wenner didn't create Rolling Stone for another 2 years.
Something at least.
Yeah.
Right. It was like 67. Yeah. Right. So a couple of years later.
Right.
So who was he before then?
He could have been a journalist, sure, but I don't know.
I don't think he was.
But
the journalist theory makes some sense.
It does.
Because if you've seen the movie Don't Look Back,
mm-hmm.
there's a famous scene in there where he's really dressing down, I think it's a New York Times
journalist,
something like that, as sort of being out of touch with what's going on in society, right?
Many clips of him doing that to a lot of different people.
Right. Yeah, a lot of press conferences.
During that time period.
Right.
He can be a mean man.
You walk into the room with your pencil in your hand, you see somebody naked and you say, who is that man? You try so hard, but you don't understand just what you will say when you get home. Because something is happening here, but you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? You raise up your head and you ask, is this where it is? Then somebody points to you and says, it's his. And you say, what's mine? And somebody else says, well, what is? And you say, oh my God, am I here all alone? But something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
But anyhow, so my theory immediately went to this, which is my aunt's brother is named Robert or Bob Jones, and he was a producer for that festival. What's the name of the festival?
Newport Folk Festival.
Right, the Newport mm-hmm. Folk and Jazz Festival. You know, so I imagined, he's backstage trying to run people around with his clipboard and, you know, pencil in his hand and trying to get things going, and then wondering what is going on with Dylan all of a sudden.
Right, he's playing electric.
Yeah. This is crazy.
And this is Mr. Jones.
His name is Mr. Jones, right?
Right.
And And I think he kind of fits the bill of the person being described for the most part, like sort of like somebody who's read all the good books and is really plugged in, and but you don't know what's going on, Mr. Right. Jones.
So, do you, Mr. Jones?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So that's my weird theory for a particular song.
I think it's so interesting,
it could be true.
It could very well be true.
Yeah. Sure.
And you could be related to that person, which is even more interesting to me. I think it's wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, we know that at the time of the Newport Folk Festival, only Like a Rolling Stone had been recorded.
Right.
For Highway 61.
That's the only song that had been recorded yet. It was recorded on June 16th, 1965. And then everything else on the album was recorded either July 29th, July 30th, August 2nd, or August 4th. So, like, in a really tight frame.
Yeah.
But right after that.
Right.
When
July 25th.
When he first went electric.
There. So it would be fresh in his mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So this is the theory.
Now, I mean, my cousin, or if he's related, whatever, he says he was kind of, he had his hands full doing something else. So he basically says, no, I don't, you know.
I didn't have any interaction with Dylan.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm not.
And did you speak to him about this?
I have not spoken to him.
Oh, okay.
I haven't seen him in years.
Well, that would be one way to test the theory, right?
Could be.
It would be a way. But, you know, this is probably not something he wants shared.
So I'm pretty sure it's not about Davy Jones.
No, I don't. I don't think so. Like, I'm gonna go ahead and say it's probably not about Davy Jones or the Monkees. Yeah. Right?
Right. I don't think so. I don't think the time would have worked out on that either.
Okay. So that's the theory you constructed.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I love it. I think it's so interesting.
It is.
Yeah. It's a good
it's
little
probably
story.
Better that you not talk to him, and so you can just hold this, keep this theory, right?
Because, yes.
You know, don't they say that the legend is, you know, is greater than the truth?
That's often, right.
Right?
Right.
There's some better saying about that.
Between the truth and the legend, print the legend.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah, exactly. Something like that.
Yeah.
In the book, in your memoir,
that's
print
right.
the legend.
Yeah. There you go. All right.
So that was very interesting.
I love that song, by the way.
Oh,
I think it's
what
a great
song.
Song.
Oh my God, it's incredible.
Yeah, it is a great song.
And it ties back to Francis and, you know, the hop along
right.
thing too.
Exactly.
Which is cool.
Like all of my stories are essentially going to kind of come from that angle. Essentially, I've gone down a rabbit hole, and somehow or another, everything's going to connect.
If you're listening, Francis, I was the guy who shouted out 10 more songs,
more guitar.
There was that guy.
So after we had our little trip and we were coming back, and Brad was like, you guys each got to find, you know, if we do this week of shows, like you each got to find a song that you have a theory about. So I initially started thinking about this in the way of an assignment. And for some reason, like I knew I was so into The Who when I was younger, like The Who, as Brad said yesterday, Kiss was his, like a big band for him. For me too, that was the first band I like really actually actively bought records by and like tried to figure out.
When I was 5 or 6, I don't know how old
I was,
young,
you know, totally elementary school, junior high, like early junior high. It was the first band where I figured, like, I tried to actually research what other records they had, you know, and I like tried to put it together and bought them. But the band after that for me was The Who. And so I was looking at all my Who albums and trying to get something. And then I remembered another album I obsessed over was a solo album of Pete Townsend's called Empty Glass.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a song on there called Rough Boys, first song in the album, right?
Rough Boys!
And I thought a lot about that song, and I knew I had something, and so I was planning to talk about that. But what happened instead was even more interesting and better. Earlier this week, and Jim and I were chatting before we turned the microphones on, I had to rent a vehicle to take a whole bunch of furniture down to my daughter's house and that she's moving in for college. And I had satellite radio, and so I was playing, I think, I can't remember what channel it was. I was just scanning around, and a song from Fables of the Reconstruction came on. It was Can't Get There From Here by R.E.M.
Right. Yeah.
And I remembered something even more interesting, that I have a theory. There's a song on that album called Cohotec.
Uh-huh.
It's just kind of a slow, draggy one on the second side of the album, I believe. Can we play a little bit of that, Jim? Can we cue up a little bit? And while we will, I'll tell you that I talk about an album I was into. This might be the album
right.
of all the R.E.M. albums that I've played the most.
Right.
And partly because I really loved it and I was so into R.E.M. at the time. And partly because I was working in a record store at the time when the album came out. And, you know, you have to play the new releases. So that's the one I played like every other record.
Yeah.
I think two people threatened to quit if I ever played it again. So let's hear a little bit of that song. Then I'll expound on my theory. On its face, you know, pretty obviously, Fables of the Reconstruction is a Southern-themed record, kind of conceptually a gothic record, but also interesting that they went to England to record it with Joe Boyd, who recorded Fairport Convention and Nick Drake and all these people to get that kind of gauzy folk rock sound that I love so much.
Yeah.
And I think on a simple reading of these lyrics, you could say it's about a romantic relationship, you know, with someone who kind of pops in and out of your life, right? But
well, let me just say real quickly, this was the first R.E.M. album I ever bought.
Okay.
And it was my freshman year of college.
Okay.
And back then, especially Michael Stipe's vocal delivery with the sort of mumbling thing and the way it was sort of buried in the mix. And they didn't print lyric sheets, and there was no, you know, Google to find
That's right.
To this day, I probably don't know any of the lyrics of that song. Like, to me, it was
same.
Just, to me, it was just a good, you know, had a good groove to it, and the music was just really interesting, and that carried it for me, but I can't tell you anything about it. And it was a weird title. Like, I can't tell you anything about this song, so I'm very interested to hear this.
Well, what I think the lyrics are, in one part, is he says... Well, let me preface this before I say it. I listened to this album for years and years afterwards. It's always been one of my favorite. I don't even know if I ever really stopped listening to it. You know, it'd probably be, I would probably play it like once a month for like years and years and years. And, you know, eventually Michael Stipe, you know, announced sort of to the world that he, you know, wasn't necessarily heterosexual. He had sort of a different lifestyle. And I think that this is the song where he's really saying that for the first time ever.
Okay.
There's a lyric in here that sort of says, like, Michael built a bridge, but Michael tore it down. And I think what he's really saying is maybe not necessarily that he's, I don't know how he identifies, but, you know, not necessarily that he's saying that, but he's saying, I've tried to live the sort of lifestyle that's considered normal, whether that's in the South or in, you know, America or wherever it is. And I think specifically the South, you know, it's sort of like, you know, he talks about this sort of romantic female relationship with bangles and bells that she's wearing. And it's like, if I'm ever going to be attracted to a person, it's going to be this person. Like, this is going to be the person, but I just can't do it. Like, I tried to build a bridge and I tore it down. And like Kahotek, you were gone. And, you know, that was the end of it. Yeah. So that's my crazy theory right there. Michael Stipe announcing to the world in his own really super coded and veiled way that, you know, that's it.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And I know many people have constructed crazy REM theories, you know, so if you have one out there.
I don't know if it's crazy. I don't know.
Well, that's what I'm banking on, is that a bunch of people have crazy theories that they want to share with you guys.
Yeah. I would love to hear them.
Yeah. I remember that, you know, reading once how Michael Stipe would get approached by people for that exact reason that you were talking about, Jim. You know, a lot of people had discovered the band. They were in college. There were no lyric sheets. They spent a lot of time trying to decipher what it was,
right,
you know, what they were saying. And he was saying, like, I always got approached by people, you know, with these elaborate, you know, backstories they'd kind of built out of what they thought the lyrics were, when in reality I wasn't singing that at all, right, or if I was, you know, I didn't mean that whatsoever. Like, I know there was a guy apparently that came up to him, and actually I think at one point had to be spoken to by law enforcement because he thought each side of Murmur represented a different side subconsciously of his dorm room. Like, he was like trying to get Michael Stipe to admit that this was like true. So, and it was like when we were talking to Joe Gross about the Fugazi thing, you know, he at one point he said Guy told him people think every Fugazi song's about drug addiction. Why? They're not about drug addiction.
Guy's at the bar, right, and he's drinking.
Right. I can't believe it. So there you go.
All right.
Yeah.
Nice.
But can you talk about the Rough Boys theory too, real quick?
Yeah, if you want to.
Because I
want to
hear this, because I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs.
It's an amazing song. Yeah. I mean, my theory is a little strange in this, too, but that, you know, it was a period of Pete Townsend's life when he was kind of like really living on the edge.
And yes.
I just thought that that song was always about him liking to get beat up. Like, he liked to get beat up. Like, at that time of his life, it was like he liked to go out and get drunk
and get beat up, yeah, cause a fight.
Yeah, and right, in some ways, I think he felt, you know, a lot of people have said, like, that song's a lot about punk rockers and, like, how he felt old. But I don't know. I always felt like he was saying, like, I love to get beat up and I want punks to beat me up. And that's what I deserve. And that's what, you know, our generation of, like, rock and rollers all deserve is kind of like that. Mm. So I could have been a little off.
I don't know. I mean, I think
there's
also been some interpretations about that. Also having to do with sexual identity, yeah, too.
That's right. Right?
Mm-hmm. So that's why I was curious about that. So it could have been interpreted
that way, too. Yeah, yeah, that he was right. Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
The roughness.
But
I guess that all depends on how you define beat up. So
yeah.
Right.
Well, but
back under the pool table with you.
I do think that's interesting because Pete, you know, Roger always had this image of a fighter, right? Because he actually was. You know, he was a kid who grew up, you know, shorter than everybody else, but, you know, muscular and fit and
right,
was able to, like, you know, really hold his own, right?
Right.
And still, he wasn't fighting,
they liked
right,
their fashion.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But
being mods and all.
But I think Pete had, he was one of these guys who would get into fights almost, I think, like you said, kind of prove himself,
yeah,
or something against
way,
Roger.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm, yeah, to show he was just as
and
tough.
He was also one of those guys who was, you know, let's be honest, you know, often like the smartest guy in the room, right? So it'd be, he wouldn't want to like take right, anything from anyone,
yeah,
you know? You
exactly,
know?
So, yeah, exactly.
So I don't know.
If they called him out for being that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there we go.
Good theory.
Bring it on, people. We want to hear your theories. There's got to be some REM ones out there, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, there have to be.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, especially those early songs. Don't even get me started on Life Through Its Pageant, you know, because that we could go on for a long time.
So I have this theory that when Mick Jagger sings I Can't Get No Satisfaction, he actually is getting satisfaction.
That's interesting. That might be true.
I don't know.
Could be.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on here. So
it's
what
on your wedding.
Yeah, that's right. All right. What are we talking about tomorrow?
Brad, why don't you talk a little bit about it? This is going to be more of a Waxahachie, Katie Crutchfield dive right here, right?
Right. So, yeah, tomorrow my thought was I was going to share with you the crazy backstory, weird theory that I've come up with for the entirety of Katie Crutchfield's Waxahachie catalog. Like the entire thing.
Wow. We're going to go through the entire thing.
Everything. We're going to play every single song.
This is a Nick Scalera situation.
That's right. And you promised you wouldn't do that. Poor Nick.
All right, let's move on here. Rock in the Suburbs. You can send us your crazy song interpretation theories.
Please.
We would love that. If we can get some of those, we can make
great.
Some really good episodes out of that.
Fantastic.
So the way to do that, first off, call. That would be the best. We would love to hear you talk.
Especially in this case.
Yeah. We'd love to hear you talk about your crazy song theories. The number to call, 612-440-1984. Get on that.
This could be one where people are whispering late at night. My favorite kinds of calls.
Yeah, I like
come
those
in
calls.
After midnight and before 3 a.m.
You like the late night calls.
I do, yeah.
So my wife's asleep, but I got this theory. Sonic.
Yeah. The other way you can contact us is you can email. That's rock@suburbspod.com. But be careful because the government might intercept that email.
Right. Be careful what you have in there.
Monitoring that.
That's right. You might want to use the dark web or a VPN.
Yeah. Or you can find us on social media where you know people are watching. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those at Suburbs Pod.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yes.
We ready to move on?
Let's do it.
All right. So it's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And I'm Brad Vermaelen.
We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Well, you walk into the room like a camel and then you frown. You put your eyes in your pocket and your nose on the ground. There ought to be a law against you coming around. You should be made to wear earphones. 'Cause something is happening and you don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones?
That's funny. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
You okay?